This is the Rental Income Podcast, where we talk to owners of rental properties and give you actionable tips and advice that will help you make more money while dealing with less hassle. And now your host, Dan Lane.
I put together a list of 7 things I wish I knew earlier about renting properties, and you can download your free copy. Just go to my website, freelandlordgift.com. One of the biggest expenses that we have as rental property owners is turnover. When a tenant leaves, we may have vacancy, so we're not getting rental income for that period. We may have to pay to have the property painted, or maybe pay to replace carpet or do some other upgrades to make the property rentable. So if you can reduce your turnover, you've essentially just given yourself a raise. My guest today has done an exceptional job of finding really good tenants and keeping them for a really long period of time. So on the show today, I want to find out exactly what he's doing. So let's get right into it. Joining me on the phone is Rob Chavez. And Rob, why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in real estate?
Oh, man. Carlton Sheets, late night infomercial. I'm probably like 1997, right? I was just graduating college. I had a teacher my senior year of college. It was a personal finance class. And he said, and by the way, it was one of the best classes I ever took. It was just teaching about interest rates and credit cards and all stuff I just didn't know at that time,
yeah.
Right? And he said something along the lines of, if you plan on living anywhere for the next 3 to 5 years, you should consider buying instead of renting. And I really took that to heart. I for whatever reason, it kind of rang true to me. I'm like, you know, I plan on being in this area for a long time, so why am I going to be a renter? I've been a renter while I was in college. You know, I saw how our landlord made money off of us in college, so I was like, I that's what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, I started just consuming some information, and, you know, I think late night, one night, I saw Carlton Sheets' thing. I bought it. I read through it, didn't understand a lick of it, but I was like, okay, let me just kind of figure this stuff out. I went out, bought a townhouse with the help of my parents, and then I rented the basement to a friend, and I rented a bedroom to another friend, and they started paying my mortgage down, and I was like, hey, this is great. I'm like,
that's awesome.
I own this asset, and I've got 2 people that are helping pay the mortgage.
Were they covering the whole mortgage or just part of it?
They were covering 75% of the of
that's
the
great. How did you – first of all, were you working somewhere? I guess you had a job. You weren't a full-time investor at that point, right? You were just –
No, I wasn't a full-time investor. I was just kind of starting to understand the power that this could bring to my life. I was working for a very successful person that sells life insurance here in the D.C. area.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw what owning a business – could do for your life. And I was with him for a couple of years, 1 year while I was in college and 1 year out of college. And then I had a good friend of mine who had started a recruiting business, and I decided to, I should say my best friend started a recruiting business, and I joined him shortly thereafter. So I helped build this business with him for about 7 years. And then he bought me out so that I could pursue real estate full time. That whole time, while I was building that business, I was getting more and more involved in real estate. So I'd take the profits from that business and start buying rental properties, and or just, you know, getting more knowledge. And so, 2005 is when I took the plunge full time as an investor. And so really the learning, education, buying some assets happened between the years of 1999 and 2005.
That's great. So tell me about your portfolio today. How many rentals do you have, and what kind of buildings do you have?
Yep. So we used to have more, but we've kind of pared them down. We have 9 townhouses. We've got one 7-unit building. One triplex and one duplex.
That's great. So, and do you manage them yourself, or do you have a property manager?
you know, we managed them ourselves. At one point, we had managed as many as 300 assets for other investors. So, you know, the few that we have, it's a piece of cake for us.
So it's not taking up a lot of time managing that many units?
No, not at all. It's like so easy.
That's great. Yeah, I love hearing that. And so many people ask me about that, that, you know, how long does it take? How much time do you put into managing rentals? And it's really not that much work day to day to do. Can you tell me about your process? I want to kind of walk through the whole life cycle of one of the units. So when a unit becomes available, how do you advertise it? How are you attracting tenants?
I've found in our area that a simple for rent sign in front of the yard. I'm a licensed agent. I have a real estate team. There's 10 on the team. Like, I sell a lot of houses. We rent a lot of property. That's like, I understand that game really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Renting our own units, I found that a simple Home Depot for rent sign, put it on Craigslist. You know, we don't even put them into the MLS. Our phone rings off the hook and
wow.
I never have a problem.
So, are you getting more renters off drive by of seeing the sign, or is it a lot of people from Craigslist too that are finding it?
In our area, it's primarily drive bys.
Wow!
Like friends, neighbors telling, "Hey, there's something available in the neighborhood." So it's interesting, right? Like every market operates. What I've learned, because we own in two different markets, right?
Mm-hmm.
So every market is different and has pockets. So where we own our 9 townhouses, it's in a Hispanic neighborhood, right? So there's
mm-hmm.
a lot of families. There's a lot of connection in the community. There's a lot of, I guess, interpersonal relationships in that community, right? So if I put a sign in the yard, a cousin or a brother or a sister is telling another family member about a property for rent in that area.
Right? Okay.
And so what happens is I know this is going to sound crazy, but out of the 8 that we have in Herndon, we've owned them since 2008. We've only had one tenant turnover since that entire time.
Wow, that's really great.
And so we never even missed a month.
What do you think that is? Like, why do you think people don't leave you? Do you think it's anything you're doing, or is it just?
I honestly don't think it's anything I'm doing. I think I've developed. Maybe there's a little bit of what we're doing. We make their life easy. We consider them clients, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're responsive. That coupled with the fact that a lot of them are raising their children in this particular area, they want to stay in the area because of schools, right?
Right.
And so I just find that if they've got kids, they don't want to disrupt, you know, they don't want to disrupt the education of the children.
Right.
And I've always been a belief that, you know, for us, I never try to strive for the highest rental amount. I keep it a little bit, you know, $25 below, you know, maybe or $50 below what the rest of the market is doing, because I don't want them shopping out there. They know that they've got a good deal with me, and I've learned that churn in this business is what kills your profit. So
right.
I don't want churn, and so I do that by, you know, not asking for the most rent. We ask for a fair amount of rent. We give them a fair amount of service, and it's worked well for us.
Do you raise the rent between terms, or are you?
We do.
Okay.
Do you? You know,
how much do you raise it by? Like, do you try to make it so that it's not too much of an increase so you don't lose them, or are you?
Well, I'm always looking at rental comp. So it's not one of those things where I just raise every year based on, you know, the fact that they were at a number at, you know, before, right? I'm
mm-hmm.
actually looking at the market and I'm saying, okay, well, the market is dictating a rental rate of $1,600 a month. They're currently at $1,500 a month. So I'm just going to go to them. And I'm going to say, you know, and we haven't built in, you know, automatic rental rates. I just mm-hmm. have a discussion with them, and I feel like, hey, these units are renting right now for about $1,600 a month. You're at $1,500 a month. We don't want to raise it to $1,500, but we feel it's fair to be at $1,550 now.
You okay. Agree?
And then typically they're like, yeah, we agree. That's fine.
That's good. Yeah, they feel like they're getting a good deal. You're not trying to go up to the maximum amount. That's really smart.
Yeah, so and it's always based on the market, right? So the market, what the rental rate is at any particular time in the year, and I just market, and I make sure that we adjust accordingly.
Walk me through how you screen tenants. And I realize you haven't screened a whole lot recently, but what are you looking for when someone applies? Income-wise, credit-wise? Like, what are some things you're looking for?
You know, it's interesting. We'll go back to these houses that we bought, let's say, in 2008, right? If you remember 2008, every house on the street was a foreclosure or a short sale. So we were getting people that were paying $2,000, $2,500 a month, you know, in a mortgage payment.
Mm-hmm.
And now, and they were defaulting on those, on their crazy, you know, loans. And now they were looking at our place, which was for rent for $1,500 a month, right?
Right.
And at first my fear was, oh, well, wait a second. They've got, you know, this particular person's got bad credit. You know, they've lost the house. But then I started digging in and realizing, well, you know, that was the only thing that was bad. Their Sprint bills were still being paid. Their electric was still being paid. There were good people stuck in bad loans, you know, who made bad decisions. And this was going to be a lot more affordable for them. So we ran a credit report on everybody. We ran a criminal background check on everybody. And I called references on everybody. We do that for every single person, right?
Okay.
And then they have to come in to my office. I have to ask them a couple of basic questions just about, I just try to develop rapport with them beforehand. If I like their application, we've decided that there's somebody that we're going to, except I still want to kind of do like a mini interview with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And tell them that we take pride in our properties. We're responsive to their needs, but we need to make sure that they're going to be responsible citizens, essentially, you know, in our properties, and we take that very serious. And then they're like, yeah, sure, great. And anyhow, then I just sign a lease with them and call it a day.
When you first show them the property, are you actually meeting them at the property to show it to them, or do you have someone out there that shows the house?
No, I did it. I showed them. I showed all the units.
Okay, yeah, so you show it to them.
I wouldn't do that today, but I did it then.
Okay,
right? Because we were renting these units fairly. I mean, we had to rent a lot of them back to back. How did we do the last one? Oh, the last one. They saw it through somebody. We just had one tenant turnover. They came into my office, right? So they had seen the unit through a friend. They then came in and made an application in my office, and that's when we talked to them and sat down and walked through everything.
So they fill out your application, you check them out, and then the next step would be the interview. So you're not doing the interview until you've had a chance to make sure they're going to qualify income-wise and their credit is where you want it to be.
Yeah, I'm not going to have a full-on. I'll have, you know, I'll ask, once they get past the references, I pretty much know that there's somebody that we're going to want, right, if the references are decent enough references. The last part is for me to just kind of solidify the decision that I've already made based on paper. Right.
Right. Okay.
I've never really had an instance where I've talked to somebody and been like, no, I don't want to rent to you.
Yeah. Okay.
If they qualify, what I'm really doing is just kind of laying down some ground rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
Based on what my expectations are and what they should expect from us as well.
Do you ever have clients that pay you late, or have you ever had any issues with that?
In Cumberland, all the time. Here in Northern Virginia, there's one lady who we bought the house directly from her, and she was constantly late all the time, fell behind. And so, but we've worked with her, you know, through the years, and she's all caught up and it's all better and she's back on her feet and everything's worked out.
Tell me more about that deal. So she was living in the house and then she sold you the house, but she stayed with the house?
Yeah, so what happened was, it was a bizarre deal. I got a call from an attorney who said, hey, I know about this property. The property has been foreclosed on. The lady that's there is a very nice lady. Her son works for me. He's like a clerk. And they, you know, they were trying to do right by the bank, and they had actually sent in a large payment to the bank, and the bank had told them that they were going to foreclose on them unless they sent in this large payment. It was about $10,000. And they sent it in on Friday, and the bank foreclosed on Monday, right?
Wow.
And so, and the bank kept the money. So, you know, it was one of these where I'm like, well, there's nothing I can really do about it. The bank already owns it. They're going to assign it to an REO agent. I'm never going to get a shot at buying this house.
Right, right.
Somehow, don't ask, like, somehow, it just turned out that he knew the REO agent that it got assigned to. The kid who was the clerk just kept calling me over and over again, hey, you have to buy our house. We don't want to move out. You know, we really want to stay here. You have to buy the house. And through his persistence, because I really didn't believe I'd be able to buy it.
Right.
His persistence, I was able to get in touch with the right people, and we were able to buy it. And when we bought it, we ran her credit. We saw what happened. I saw that she'd been at the same company for 20 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
I looked at all her balance sheet, and I was like, yeah, we can keep you guys in here, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, they've been there since 2008.
Wow. So you had problems with her paying?
Over maybe about 2 or 3 years, probably about 2.5 years ago, she got the entrepreneurial bug and mm-hmm. decided she wanted to leave her job of 20 years to go start a business. And, you know,
yeah,
we know what that's like,
right?
Starting a business, you better have some cash reserves. So yeah. Anyhow, she had pension. What she did was she kind of took like she took retirement, right? So she'd been there. She took retirement, but it was half the amount of money that she was making before. And she was hoping that she would be able to kind of make a run out of this business. Mm-hmm. And so she started falling behind. And, we just kept applying pressure. Hey, you can't be behind. We've known you guys for a long time. We know the attorney that referred you. And we would just always kind of go back to the attorney that mm-hmm. had referred us and had him apply pressure to her. And we, you know, there's been a couple of times, unfortunately, where we've been like, okay, we're serving notice. You're now, you know, $3,000 behind. We don't see you catching up. Mm-hmm. So we've got to serve notice, and we serve them notice, and then they catch back up.
Okay.
So now she's back on her feet. She's got a good job, and it's all worked out. Normally, I would never be that lenient with somebody, but there was a lot of history there, and we never had to renovate the house. That was kind of the other kicker, that, you know, when we bought it, it was already day one. There was a tenant in that property, right? There was no going in and carpets and painting and all the rest. So, you know, I kept telling my partner, when we get this property back, if she leaves, we're going to have to go in and put in like $20,000 just to get this property in the condition to re-rent, right?
Right.
Because she just hasn't taken the best care of it.
In general, with your other properties, what are you doing when a tenant moves out? Do you always paint and replace carpet, or what kind of cleaning up are you doing between tenants?
Yeah, I mean, I assess it. We'll go in, we'll look at it. We'll see, does it need paint? Does it need just steam cleaning, or does it actually need carpet, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we were in Cumberland, we found that every single time we had a tenant turn over, it needed new carpet and it needed new paint, right?
Wow.
In Northern Virginia, that hasn't been the case, right? If we've had a tenant turnover, we've been able to get away with just steam cleaning, maybe some touch-up, and maybe having our handyman person go in and tighten up some counters and cabinets and things like that. But for the most part, we've been very lucky with our Northern Virginia portfolio.
Do you budget a particular amount of money that you're set aside every month so that you have the money there to do whatever needs to be done?
Yeah, so the good thing, I was talking to my partner today about that. He said, you know, we've never, ever had to. We'll take a distribution at the end of the year based on what's that in that account, right? Mm-hmm. We'll take, you know, like right now I think we have maybe, I want to say $30,000 in that account.
Mm-hmm.
That's just buffer money, right? That's
what you right.
We don't live off that money. We don't take that money. We just let that money kind of build up. And at the end of the year, you know, he'll strike it to himself for $3,000 or $4,000. I'll to myself for $3,000 or $4,000. We'll have a Merry Christmas. And but that money just kind of stays in that account. And, you know, we distribute it out. So they're cash cows. So I haven't had to, they're just cash cows.
Okay. All right. Well, next I want to shift into the lightning round. So, Rob, we've had some really, really bad luck at first. A lot of people couldn't get the five questions in 60 seconds, but okay. I think we're on a hot streak here. We're, the last five guests have been able to beat the buzzer. Do you think you can beat the buzzer? Do you think you can get all five questions in 60 seconds?
I'll do my best.
Okay, let's do it.
Now, the Rental Income Podcast Lightning Round. Five rapid-fire questions and answers in 60 seconds.
All right, the first question is, what's your favorite real estate book?
I like the Millionaire Real Estate Investor book.
Nope.
And Everything You Need to Know About Cash Flow.
Okay, number two, the number one fear that I hear from people all the time on why they don't want to own a rental property is they don't want to get a call at 3 a.m. that a toilet's clogged. As a landlord, have you ever gotten this call?
When we're managing your properties, yes, but with my own portfolio, the answer is no.
If you had a property sitting vacant for 6 months, you had someone apply that had horrible credit and a spotty work history, would you take a chance on them and rent to them or let the property sit?
Let the property sit.
If you could give one piece of advice to a new landlord, what would it be?
Screen your tenants and don't take a tenant out of desperation.
And number five, would you rent a property to your best friend?
My best friend's rich, so I would say yes.
Oh, Rob, perfect. Perfect. We did it. We got it in just in time. Great job. Great job. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Rob. It was great talking to you. Why don't you tell us how we can get in touch with you? Tell us about your team and what else you have going on.
Sure. Well, we're in Northern Virginia. Our offices are at Arreston. We're with Keller Williams Realty. We service the Northern Virginia, D.C. Metro market. And there's 10 of us on the team. We actively work. Actually, we work with a lot of investors, a lot of developers, a lot of builders. Right, so that's one core area. I have another vertical that handles a lot of short sales, and we do a lot of very specific neighborhoods in Vienna, Arlington, and in Reston. So you can get a hold of me at thecazagroup.com. That's Theza Group.com. And we also, you know, we have a meetup that people can go to. It's the CASA Investor Network. So that meetup's specifically for real estate investors.
Awesome. Well, Rob, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. It was great talking with you. If anybody is looking to get started owning rental properties and you don't know exactly what to do, you don't know the exact steps to take to get going, I've put together a totally free 3-part video training series that walks you through everything you need to know. We talk about the 7-step process to get started. I talk about how to line up the financing. Pretty much everything you're going to need to know to get going is in this training class. So if you want to check it out, you can go to rentalcourse.com and you can download the video series right there. Thank you so much for listening to the show. I really appreciate it. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.